Hello, everybody. I know you've missed this lovely voice. It's been a while. We're back again. The boys from Nigeria, to be precise, are back again to give you quality content for the 2022-2023 season. So without further ado, welcome to the best podcast in the world, back on our podcast. Yeah. Josh, how are you, man?
I'm great. You decided to drop our location, which I don't think we ever did throughout last season. But it's all good.
Can you imagine? I asked, how are you? Instead of you to say, you're fine, they asked me back.
You're already complaining.
Is this the way you want to start the season with? With complaints,
Okay. Okay. Let me stop complaining and let me say, I'm actually doing great. Incredible stuff happening in the transfer window. Chelsea being slapped left, right, and center by Barcelona. United being rejected by Frankie about 100 times. It has been fun.
Yeah. It has been fun. During this our long break, long but still short in a way. If you actually deep it.
You are confused.
If you actually deep it, I've had a lot of time to think and see how biased fans are, and it makes me appreciate this platform we're trying to build here on us giving our natural raw takes. So, of course, we are human beings. We can have some level of bias, but right here, if you're joining us for the first time, I promise you, Josh himself is someone that doesn't allow his bias cloud his thinking. So that's why I appreciate my co-host very. So I think when you go outside there and start hearing takes from different fans, like, you can see that some people, their club can't sign prostitutes and they will still support their club. Like, basically, their club can do an absurd thing and there will still be a reason. Some people will start looking for a logical reason to back their club. So it's just crazy at the end of the day, man. So I'm just appreciative of what we are trying to build. So yeah, the beautiful stuff, like you said, Manchester United, you know, still trying to pull Frankie deal. Chelsea are still in the corner trying to get some signings in. So yeah, where do we even start from? I think we can, anywhere we start from will be the right start, position to, you know, kick the show from.
Thank you. That's me, and you know you're not a nice person, but you can deceive the listeners, though. It's fine. For me, not being biased, I'm not still going to see the club I saw, because it's people. Oh, trust me, I will drag my club. I don't send anybody. We drag them, and it's just the way it is. Speaking of bias, let's start with Ronaldo, because a lot of Ronaldo fans will not like this. But this Ronaldo situation here, how do you see it? Are you surprised that there are no takers so far for him, or it's because of his age and his everything he comes with?
I think, for being honest, Ronaldo is a quality player, but there are so many compounding factors in regards to why so many clubs are not necessarily interested in the prospect of bringing Ronaldo to their club. No, like, number one, you mentioned the age. Two, you have to look at his wages. Three, you have to now look at, let's be real, Ronaldo is a player that you have to change the entire system to accommodate him because of his deficiencies, because of how he has aged. It's not like he's a bad player. No, he can still give you the goals, but you now have to, you know, compensate for his lack of pressing, the what is it called? The other part in terms of build-up play that teams are interested in, and mostly the pressing, which is key in modern football these days. So there are so many compounding factors. So looking at it, like, man, is he the guy that you really want to build your team around at 37? So many clubs are looking at it and saying no to that, but at the end of the day, no one is going to disagree that, yes, he will still give you goal scoring, but he will still score a lot of goals, but what are the other things he will bring to the table? And that is what other clubs are looking at.
Okay, so let me just buttress one thing you said. You talked about his wages, right? His wages are very high. But then I think it's not that high in a way that, okay, let me, because I've seen different articles saying that every United player had a portion of their wages cut off for not qualifying for the Champions League. And in Ronaldo's case, it was 25%. So, I don't know, my math is not great, but if you take 25% from 500k a week, that leaves you with about 375 or so. So now, automatically, he's now earning 375k, which I think is not utterly ridiculous. It's not out of reach for clubs. I think the only stumbling block now is clubs don't want to pay a transfer fee. That's why we've seen in the last few days, his agent, Jorge Mendes, has had meetings with the United hierarchy for them to cancel his contract. That part, I don't even get it at all, because why would United cancel his contract just because he wants to leave? So I find that very amusing. But I see, I think if they manage to make United do it, either through blackmail or begging or whatever, if they do it, then I think more clubs will come forth for Ronaldo, considering that his 500k week wages have already been slashed at United. And then
I don't necessarily disagree with what you're saying. What you're saying makes a lot of sense. But the way I see it still is like, even like, look at the clubs around. Like, Ronaldo wants to go to a Champions League club. And the clubs that are in the Champions League right now, most of them are sort of happy with what they have. And in them, and like I said, what was seen in modern football, you have to bring more to the table as a striker beyond just goal scoring. And Ronaldo at 37, he doesn't have that all-round gameplay. Yes, he does it in flashes. This is my issue with people. Some people will listen to this and say, oh, but he still had assists, he still had this, but abnormalities doesn't just disprove the point. He can do it in flashes, but can he do it week in, week out? That's what we're saying. The only thing Ronaldo guarantees you week in, week out is his output in terms of goal scoring. So I think goal scoring is a huge deal, but I think right now the other big clubs are looking at it like, if I'm going to pay you this amount of money and all that, I need to see more. And yeah, it'll be an interesting thing, because at the end of the day, I feel like going into the season to end up being toxic, just like we saw with Juventus, where he left just before the end of the window.
And one more thing. I don't want people to start saying, oh, Ronaldo disturbs team harmony, Ronaldo... No. The way I look at it is, he disrupted United dressing room because he was annoyed with the mediocrity he was watching in training on the pitch beside him. So that was why he was angry. But if you put competent world-class players around Ronaldo, I don't think you have any news or reports of a toxic dressing room. That's that. And
yeah, that's true. But
Ronaldo himself is like, he's really throwing his toys out the pram, because he left early this friendly against Rayo Vallecano. Yeah, he left at halftime. And even before the game, he said he tweeted the King will play, like on Sunday the King plays, which I found to be very, very strange. But it's Ronaldo, I guess he has earned the right to do it. But I can't think of any other player that would have said something like that apart from Zlatan Ibrahimovic. So both of them are, I guess, in a league of their own in terms of their confidence, or should we say ego. But do you think this Ronaldo leaving at halftime, is it a big deal, or is the media just milking it too much?
To me, it's a big deal, because it doesn't send the right message. Obviously, We all know that there was reports where he wanted to leave, and the excuse from his entourage was that he's dealing with family matters. So that was when we saw that George Mendes was going around Europe trying to look for potential suitors. So my point is, like, that leaving at halftime there doesn't help the narrative that you're trying to pull out, you're trying to leave us, you're trying to leave us out here to dry. That's from the United perspective. So leaving at that time creates more toxicity, and it just feeds more into the media's narrative that they're currently having. So I think it was something that was highly unnecessary.
Okay, but in his defense, right? Let's play devil's advocate here. In Ronaldo's defense, he wasn't the only one that left. I know Bruno Fernandes left as well. And one other person who I fail to remember right now, I know Bruno Fernandes left, and I think Alex Telles or someone like that. So, but then the difference is those others that left were not even in the match day squad. They just came as spectators to support their teammates. So it's different when Ronaldo played the first half and then left the stadium. I think that's a bit worse than Bruno leaving while not being in the squad. But, I mean, we'll see how it unfolds. In United, generally now, this transfer window, how would you rate their business? Have they done enough? Do they need to do more?
Just quickly, because we don't have enough time to spend on this all day, but to just wrap up on the United transfer window so far, they've signed a right back, they've signed a centre back. I think those are good signings. Martinez especially improves them a lot in terms of ball playing, progressing of the ball from the back. But when I look at the squad, have they really improved from last season? I don't think so. And they might potentially lose Ronaldo. So in a way, they're still somehow the same going into the season. So I feel like Manchester United are not even ready to start the season. Obviously, it could change in the next 3-2 weeks before the window ends. It could change. But as of this moment, United are still somewhat similar to the way they are. Now they are trying to rely on Martial to score the goals. Is it this season he's going to kick on and activate the Ballon d'Or clause that Monaco set? Are we going to see that happen? So at the end of the day, man, there are so many fires for Ten Hag to put out. And it's just sad because, Josh, I said this to you. I wanted Ten Hag over Xavi Hernandez. That's how I rate him, because I feel he's a good manager. And I feel they've not helped Ten Hag course. Yep. And he's obviously, the way it is, to me, he's set up to fail next season.
I actually agree with you. I don't think they've done enough. I think Malaysia for competition for Luke Shaw, I think is good, because Luke Shaw sits up when he has competition. So that's good. I think Martinez is going to start, obviously, for them to be signing him. But question marks remain over who is going to be his partner. Is it Maguire? Is it Bar? Bae might be leaving, so clearly not Bae. And in the midfield, Eriksen, I don't think he's going to be a starter. At least most of the games, I don't see Eriksen being a starter, because imagine a starting 11 of that you have Eriksen, Bruno Fernandes, and Ronaldo against the top six. You are finished without the ball, because those three are not going to do any marking whatsoever, and you have eight players to defend. So I don't think Eriksen will be starting too much. So basically, I agree with you. They've not done enough yet, but they can change it. Let's go to a club who I think have done enough, Arsenal. I mean, wow, what a transfer window so far. Gabriel Jesus, you have Zinchenko, you have Fabio Vieira. It's actually, I look at Arsenal and I'm like, this team should make the top four.
Yeah, Arsenal, they've done fantastically well in the transfer window. Last season, they fell short, just finishing just above the qualification spot for the Champions League and just below the qualification spot for the Champions League. And now, they've improved. This is the key thing. They've improved on what they had last season. They've retained most of the key players that helped them last season. They've got rid of some of the players that didn't help them in Lacazette and Aubameyang. They've reduced their wage bills drastically. And now they've reinvested and improved on what they had. They signed Nketiah to a new deal. They got in Gabriel Jesus. They signed Fabio Vieira. They also signed Zinchenko, who I think is a very solid buy, considering that Tierney is always injured. So when I look at Arsenal, they've also retained Saliba, who was the best young player in the Ligue 1 last season, in the French League. So I feel like Arsenal are well prepared to start the season. They've improved their squad. They've had a good preseason. You can see Gabriel Jesus firing his preseason. I think that's a solid buy that we improve them and will contribute a lot to their goal scoring. And all in all, I think exciting times to be an Arsenal fan, in my opinion.
I couldn't have said it better myself. I think, like you said, Jesus has been on fire in preseason. Just on the side note, Jesus is currently the most owned player in FPL. FPL obviously starts this Friday as the season starts. In over 70% of squads so far. So that's incredible. So basically, if you don't have Jesus in your FPL, you're a very, very brave person. And I'm not that brave. I have him. I'm sorry. I need to have him in case he does anything special. I will not be missing out. And I think for Zinchenko, it's a case of, I'm not sure he's going to be a starter any space. But then Arteta is a good to have. Should I start Zinchenko? Should I start Tierney? I think healthy competition is always a good thing for any club, especially a top club like Arsenal. And I would say Arsenal can only shoot themselves in the foot if they don't at least really compete for top four. Now, for their neighbors, Spurs. We've been seeing on social media, Spurs fans are saying they are going to be pushing for the title. I'm not sure about that, but definitely very, very strong going into the new season.
Yeah, man, I agree with that. Like, it's the same to me. It's very similar with Arsenal. Spurs, they finished strongly. They got into the Champions League spots, and they've improved on what they have. Like, they got a solid midfielder in Bissouma. They also got still retained Bentancur. Kulusevski obviously is still there, and we all know that Spurs has one of the best attack in the league in Harry Kane and Son Heung-min, and now they've improved that with Richarlison. Don't get me wrong, Richarlison is not like a world-class player or anything, but for Spurs to have him in their bench or in their ranks and they can call upon him, that is a good quality to have within the ranks. And obviously, they got in Perisic, who will be their left wing back, and he will still be a creative force for them. So I'm looking at it like the only worrying thing is maybe their defense. Obviously, they signed Lenglet, and Lenglet is a person that is error prone. And I feel like if Conte can get the discipline out of him, I think he's not a bad player. He's a very good progressor of the ball and a good passer of the ball as well. So I feel like if they can tune him and get the best out of him, that would be a solid signing. But we'll just have to wait and see. Finger crossed on that. I think I'll go either way. It's going to be 50-50. But all in all, I think the only thing that might actually push Spurs from not even challenge, I think that there will be challengers. I don't think they are contenders, but I think there will be challengers. Challengers in the sense that I don't see City taking 6 points from them, and I don't see Liverpool taking 6 points from them. So I think they can beat those teams. And if they are able to beat the other 14 teams comfortably, I think come the end of the season, Spurs will be in a very, very solid position.
Yeah, I needed you to explain that challengers and what was the word again? Contenders. I was a bit lost there. But yeah, you did. And what I'll say is, for Richarlison, I think he's a luxury buyer. He's just like the Eriksen to United, because it gives them an option, but I don't think it necessarily strengthens the first team, because personally, I'm taking Kulusevski over Richarlison. I don't know what you think about like those two head-to-head.
No, I agree with that. I would take Kulusevski over him. But let's remember, Spurs now in the Champions League. In England, they play two cup competitions plus the league. So exactly. Plus the compounding effect that the World Cup will have in fixture conjunctions. So I feel like it's not a bad signing to just have somebody that you can call upon when there's crisis of injury and players losing form.
No, definitely not a bad signing. But I'm judging transferring though on have you strengthened your first team? That's how I want to look at it. I don't.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough then.
Used to for years, but maybe you wanted to play under Conte again. Maybe. For Longley, I think there's a good defender hiding in there, but his confidence is on the floor. He has been prone to mistakes for the past 18 months or 2 years, let me say. But I think in a back three, he can do well because then if he makes a mistake, he might not be punished because he has a covering center back or an extra covering center back. So I think Longley might find his feet, but I'm not putting money on it. So we'll see. But I think Kane's son stay fit, then definitely Spurs are always going to be a force to reckon with. I'm going to say something now. As at today, the 3rd of August, I see Spurs and Arsenal finishing above Chelsea.
I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that. That leads us straight down to Chelsea. Because the reason why I understand what you're saying is when I look at it like this, other teams that are in and around the conversation, they've improved, they strengthened. Now, Chelsea, they've lost Lukaku. Obviously, Lukaku is not a big miss. But when I look at Chelsea, they lacked goals last season. Coming into this season, they still lack goals. You cannot leave all the workload on Raheem Sterling because we know that as much as he scores a lot, he misses a lot as well. Now, when I look at Chelsea going into this season, they are the only place that their goal scoring will come from are probably the wing backs, like the Chelsea fans normally say, that if they were not injured, they could have probably challenged for the league. But we all know that is just futile.
Yeah, right.
It's just Mason Mount and Raheem Sterling that realistically that can give them 15 GA going into next season. Now they lost Rudiger, one of the best centre backs in the world. I don't care what anyone wants to say about him. He has been very good for the past 18 months. He has been solid and they've lost him on a free. They've lost Christiansen on a free. So now they are relying on Sarr and Chalobah. But yes, they've gotten Koulibaly. they've gotten Koulibaly, one of the best defenders in the world as well. I think he has been solid for the past 6-7 years, Koulibaly. But at the end of the day, I still feel like they are still shaking. Obviously, if they get Fofana, that would be a good deal. But Fofana is 50-50 for me. We don't know how he's going to recover from the ACL he had long term. So their midfield, obviously, Kante, Jorginho, they were not as solid last season. Would they be going into this season relying on them? Obviously, if they get Frankie De Jong, maybe that will solve the issue. But at the end of the day, when I look at Chelsea, there are so much ifs and buts. Like, there's no certainty regarding what they are doing. Obviously, it could change from now till the end of the window. But as at this moment, I think Chelsea, they've not improved on what they had. If anything, they look depleted. So I feel like, yeah, for that reason, I feel like Spurs and Arsenal will have a better season than Chelsea. But obviously, I'm happy to be wrong.
Okay, so where will I even start from? The Lukaku saga was actually quite pathetic. That a grown man was crying that he wanted to go to Inter. It was basically Inter or nothing. He wasn't even trying to see if he could be Lewandowski's replacement at Bayern, which I think would have been a better step to go to Bayern than go back to Inter. But he's just like you missing your ex and you just don't want any other person. You just want to go back to your ex. So I guess fair play to him. He's there on loan. I think for the incomings, Koulibaly, you said Rudiger is world class. I am not disagreeing with that in any way, shape, or form. But Koulibaly is an upgrade on Rudiger. Do we agree on that?
Upgrade. If we're talking about terms of quality, maybe, yeah, I'll agree with that. No. It's not even maybe. I'll agree with that. Passing, IQ, power. I'll agree with that. But like the Rudiger one, losing him on a free, and he's a younger version anyway. So, man, I feel like that was a huge blow on Chelsea.
Yeah, I think. Okay, maybe it sounds like I'm disrespecting Rudiger. Let's say like for like, they are not going to be weaker because of Koulibaly for Rudiger. That's basically my point. And
yes, I can agree with that.
And I think Sterling in a. Because the way Chelsea have been playing since Tuchel came, it was like Lukaku was too stiff for them. He needed fluidity. And so I would say Sterling over Lukaku in this particular system, not as players generally, but in this system. So I'll say they've improved those two places, but here is why I still think they are short. Kante had a lot of injury problems last season. He missed about half of the games, which is quite incredible to think. This was someone that barely missed games before. You have the defense lacking in terms of center back options. Malangsa, Chaloba are not good enough. Let's be frank and honest. I'd say Azpilicueta's mind is not there. He has told the club he wants to leave. He wants to go to Barcelona. Marcos Alonso also wants to go to Barcelona. Emerson is being linked with a move to Lazio. So Chelsea's defense looks like it's in shambles. But then, like you said, there are links to Fofana, there are links to Marco Correa. I think if they get those two, then it's looking a lot better than currently where they've not gotten them yet. So I would say right now, Chelsea finished below Spurs and Arsenal, but that can easily change with two or three good signings. So, yeah, that's for Chelsea. Now let's talk about the big two. Liverpool losing Mane, buying Darwin Nunez. It's not like for like because they are two different kinds of players, but does that weaken them?
I would just like, obviously, I can be biased here because. As Josh knew, I like Sadio Mane very well. I think he's a fantastic player. I think when I look at like for like, I will still die on this hill. As a footballer, I think Mane is more of a technically gifted footballer than Salah. But at the end of the day, Salah is just more productive than Mane. But losing Mane...
Let's be serious, please. Let's be serious, please.
Let me land on my points. You know, it's you can argue with it all you want. Even the Liverpool players, they've confirmed it when they asked them in an interview who is the most technically gifted player, and they were naming names, and then he mentioned Salah. When the interviewer mentioned Salah, they laughed at him. So that's just the truth. Like you can when we talk about controlled way of passing, shooting, and everything, Salah is not. Like, his output is outrageous, don't get me wrong, and I'm not downplaying it. Salah is a good footballer, but at the end of the day, when we talk about technicality, it's not really there. But that's a different debate for another day. Obviously, what I'm just going to say is, Mane for the past two seasons hasn't been the Sadio Mane that we knew from Southampton and his early days at Liverpool. Then, all of a sudden, he had a fantastic February, he had a fantastic March, and he had a fantastic April, and all of a sudden, people want him to win the Ballon d'Or. That is all nice, but at the end of the day, he was very, very poor at the first half of the season. But my point now is, Mane is a player that steps up in big moments. Mane is a good player that steps up in big moments, and I feel like Liverpool might be losing there when the shit hit the fence. They might actually need a player that could step up. Obviously, Darwin Nunez coming in, I won't say it improves them like the way Mane was in there. But I will say this. Yes, Darwin Nunez doesn't know how to trap a ball. He's not technically as gifted. He doesn't know how to do the basic rights. But I still see him scoring a lot of goals simply because the club system creates a lot for attacking players to score. So I think at the end of the day, Liverpool will be all right, because when you look at it, they've built on what they've had. They've added Nunes, they've added Carvalho, Javier Lutz is back from his from injury. Like, all in all, like, Liverpool, they are still a very, very solid side, and I think they are the closest, or they are even somewhat favourites in a way, to even win the Premier League, simply because of one thing. When you look at Liverpool's team, that's something I clocked today. Like, only three players will actually be a starter in the World Cup. The rest are not necessarily starters in their national team, and some of them won't be going. Unlike Manchester City, where most of them in the starting 11 are starters in their national team. So yeah, that could be a deciding factor in a way, but we'll wait and see.
Okay. When you put that in, I completely agree. I was thinking just in terms of squad quality. I was about to have a big argument with you right now, but when you talk about the World Cup situation, then I have no arguments at all. For the money own, I think there are a lot of very good players who people think that these players are actually better than they are. And I'll name just three names. Bruno Fernandes, Mason Mount, Sadio Mane. Very good players, don't get me wrong. But they should not be put as highly as they are being put by fans in general, in my opinion. Mane, for me, leaves a few things to be desired. I don't want to say a lot. He seems to always get annoyed when things don't go his way, in terms of, like, if he doesn't start a match, if someone doesn't pass to him, he likes to throw a tantrum. I hate seeing things like that. In terms of his finishing, from August to December, it was absolutely horrific until, like you said, he picked form in February. So, I mean, there's always this short-term memory when we talk about football. People only remember you. Like, people are saying Salah is trash because Salah was trash from February to the end of the season, forgetting that beginning of the season till January, he's the one that carried Liverpool. But I digress. For Darwin Nunes, I would say he's a bit different from the average big number nine in terms of he's not unwilling to run the channels. Like, he has pace and he's willing to go wide left. He's willing to drift right to get the ball. So I see Darwin Nunes as like a younger Lewandowski, who was more willing to run the channels at Dortmund, but obviously not as good as Lewandowski. I'm not going there. But like, I just see the same kind of hardworking player, which I think is why he would fit perfectly into the Jurgen Klopp system. And I think that's all I want to say for Liverpool. But City getting Haaland, is that just game over? Everybody just go home, like, don't bother. If not for the World Cup, would you have said that was it?
No. Obviously, City will be there. Like, don't get me wrong. Pep Guardiola is the manager that we've known over the years to find solutions to complex problems. So right now, City, they are facing a complex and complex problem, because when we actually dip the Community Shield game, you see that Liverpool played well. They are pressing. They got their pressing game spot on. But City were a bit jaded. They didn't look in sync. And obviously, it could be because of two reasons. Obviously, maybe Klopp was tactically more astute than Pep. Or you could also look at it like the system Guardiola is trying to implement to accommodate Haaland. They are not used to it, because when you look at it, Haaland was passive in some phases in the game and it didn't really contribute much. But obviously,
Can I just butt in there?
I'll just hang on this. Adding Haaland and Julian Alvarez improves the team when you actually look at their outputs. And I will say this. Julian Alvarez is a player that is massively underrated, and I think he can come in and have a very good impact. And the two things I will just end up saying is this. If City find a way to implement Haaland as quickly as possible, because we all know that from City's record under Pep, they have a slow start. If by the time they hit that form that we normally see where they go 15 to 18 games unbeaten and Haaland is in form, I think they'll be very, very strong and a strong force to reckon with. And lastly, just like I just said with Nunes, and the same, I'm going to say the same with Haaland, both players and in a team that they create chances for fun. So for them to fail is almost impossible. That's just what I'll say.
Okay. I just wanted to talk about the whole Community Shield stuff just quickly. I think you basically said one of the reasons why Liverpool won. City starts the season slowly, like not obviously this season hasn't started, but they started last season slowly, 2 seasons ago, 3 seasons ago. It's because they have a very, very short preseason. I think they played only 2 preseason games, if I'm not wrong. Compare that to Liverpool, who played at least 4 or 5 games. I think is Guardiola's style of management. We're not even worthy to question it. Even if it cost them is a good start to the season, they always seem to pick up and win the league more often than not. And I think for Haaland, it's very, very... You see, we live in a world where everybody wants to be a critic. Everybody wants to banter everybody. And it's all fun and games. But I laugh when I see people saying Haaland will flop. This is not Bundesliga. This is not Bundesliga. Haaland is going to score at least 25 goals in the Premier League alone. I have said it. Premier League alone. Before we talk of all competitions.
Yeah, I would say he will score 20 goals alone in the Premier League and all competitions.
I'm going 25.
All competitions, he will have 32 goals. That's what I'll just say. All competitions, he will have at least 32 goals. The reason why I say 32 goals is we know Pep's rotation and all that will kick in. So he might limit him. But at the end of the day, I the way I see it is the Nunes and Haaland team, they are in the perfect team that creates chances for fun. And if they can sink in and enter the system that the manager has built, I'm telling you, that will be a harmony and that will be a marriage in heaven. And going by the track record we've seen from Nunes and the track record we've seen from Haaland from his Dortmund days, if the chances are there, they are sure to score.
I won't really say track record for Nunes because it's just one season. But yeah, if it's based on last season, then absolutely. I was going to say something about Haaland in terms of the game. Haaland had 3 good chances. The one at the end where it was harder to miss than it was to score, that hit the crossbar. There's that. There's the one that he absolutely bullied and just disgraced Robertson, but he couldn't finish. So if you look at it and you say, yes, he wasn't at his best, but still, he had 2-3 chances to score. Imagine when he's now at his best, clicking with the team. And also, De Bruyne had one of the, in terms of his passing accuracy and what he tried to implement, I was very disappointed with De Bruyne, honestly, because there were some times where, let me not say I'm disappointed with De Bruyne. Let me say it's clear that the relationship is not there, because I can blame Haaland for going too early. I can blame De Bruyne for not playing the pass accurately. But I've just grown to expect De Bruyne to always hit his target. So I was a bit surprised with how off he seemed to be to me. But yeah. in terms of cities, okay, you wanted to say something?
No, I said fair enough.
Okay, in terms of City's transfer window, I would say Haaland, Alvarez. I agree with you that Alvarez is going to have a good season. I will not even be surprised if come January, February, he has displaced Mahrez in the first team, because he's someone that is a goal threat and he's not afraid of going wide. Like, he's not afraid of putting in the hard yards for the betterment of the team. But just finally on City, will Pep regret letting Sterling and Jesus go? Yes or no?
No, I don't necessarily think so. No, not really. I don't necessarily think so. It just depends on how Haaland and Julian sinks. If they sing quickly enough, I don't think they'll miss them.
Okay, maybe in the case of... What did you say?
No. I said maybe they might miss Sterling because Sterling has this this thing about him. He knows how to be in positions. But I'm sorry.
You just mentioned Sterling. Something just occurred to me. How does anybody pick Grealish over Sterling? I need someone to explain to me. I'm not the biggest fan of Sterling, and I'm certainly not a Grealish fan. But how can you pick Grealish over Sterling? They just have to justify the 100 million, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You see, there are some things I feel like that me and someone were arguing today, just off topic a bit. Like, the person said something that struck me. He said he doesn't think Haaland is a Pep Guardiola signing. That the Pep Guardiola signing was Julian Alvarez, but Man City just went for Haaland. And I was like thinking of it, yes. Because when you look at the way Pep likes to play, he tries to be flexible. So I feel like at the end of the day, some of all these signings are not necessarily signings. He just has to accommodate them because the hierarchy wants them in the team.
Yeah, actually, when you say that, it's like controversial in terms of they are picking for the manager, but it's not going to be the first time it's going to happen in the club. So I will not be surprised if that is actually the case. Now, we've talked about these big clubs and their signings. So now there's only one thing left to do. Let's arrange the top six in order of how they finish next season. Over to you, sir.
I've been the one starting the convo. You say yours. Let's hear.
Okay. So let me just put this out now. Disclaimer: I am free to change this prediction at the end of the transfer window. You are also free to change. We are picking it based on how the squads are as at today, August 3rd. Right. So as of today, I'm going City first, Liverpool second, Spurs third, Arsenal fourth, Chelsea fifth, Man U sixth. But like I said, transfers can easily change that.
You see, me and you are like mine. There's nothing to add or to change in your setup.
Exactly the same.
Yeah, that is the same. Exactly.
No. But you talked about the World Cup and Liverpool. Don't you want to switch your
thoughts? No. I still feel Manchester City will win it because obviously I might be biased because I still like Pep Guardiola. But at the end of the day, I just feel Manchester City can will still be the one to win it come the end of the season. I think this is a fantastic opportunity for Liverpool, but I feel like Manchester City will win it. And the reason why we put Manchester United last is the three reasons we stated. Don't come and be crying for
yeah, crying like we hate United, blah blah blah.
I don't hate. Bottom line is they've not improved on what they had. So I don't see them topping those other guys that have improved. It's simple. Very simple to understand.
And then I don't get this whole Frankie de Jong or nothing approach. There's literally Ruben Neves in Wolves. Why is Ruben Neves Wolves?
You know that kind of thing where you go, you try to get the girls, you try to get like make a girl like you.
I don't know. You know. Continue. Enlighten us.
Wait now. You know. Stop pretending. You try to make a girl like you. She rejects you and says she likes her current boyfriend, but you now be hanging in the background. So just in case she breaks up with the boyfriend, she'll come to you. That is what Manchester United are doing with Frankie. It's just time to move on, man. Let that shit go, man.
Okay, so Golden Boot highest assist.
Golden Boot, I think it should be Salah. Highest assist, I think it should be Harry Kane.
Okay, I'm going to go Harry Kane.
No. Okay. Highest assist will be De Bruyne. Sorry.
Okay. Highest assist will be De Bruyne. I'm going to go Harry Kane, Golden Boot, and De Bruyne highest assist. Player of the season.
Player of the season. I think it will be De Bruyne.
Because we're backing City to win the league and De Bruyne to have most assists. You know, yeah. I'd say player of the season, De Bruyne also. But then, if Haaland wins, you know what? I've backed Haaland to score 25 league goals. Do I see Kane scoring more than 25?
Yes. I'm not Kane sure. is on pace. Kane is on penalties. Haaland is not on penalties. I don't think Haaland will be taking penalties over De Bruyne.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. I'm just trying to see the entire player of the season dynamic. I said De Bruyne as well. Okay, so manager.
Don't quote me on that. Haaland might take penalties. We just have to wait and see.
Okay. If Haaland takes penalties, I'm free to change my prediction. So I guess that's all for now. With no time for FPL, unfortunately. I just hope everybody picks your. I hope you pick your FPL team without your club bias. Don't do. I'm a Chelsea fan, so Chelsea players must be my team, or United fans the same, and so on.
I hate Liverpool. I won't put Salah in my team. I pity you.
You know. I have a friend here. He supports United, and he used to be. I hate Salah. I won't put him in my team. Until there was a point last season that he had to put him. He didn't have a choice.
Exactly. So if you like do that, it will cost you points and rank, and you finish in the top 700 million of the rankings.
Okay. So quickly before we go, game week one of the Premier League. I'm saying game week one, like FPL. Match day one. Any surprises or give out of the blue? What do you see happening?
I think Gabriel Jesus will surprise us. I think he will bang. And I just hope Arsenal give us the kickoff that we expect. The lightning fast kickoff we normally love from the Premier League. I think all the big teams will win. But question marks on United though. But we'll see.
No. If we're talking about just this weekend, United are going to beat Brighton. I don't know about how they will play this entire season, but just this weekend, they are going to be Brighton. And I'm going to go, well, no, it's not a surprise, but I'm going to say Salah shamelessly gets his goal against newly promoted team on game week one.
Yeah, man, we needed to get it. He's going to be the captain of most managers, so.
Yeah, he's my captain as well, so I'm shameless too. So that's all for this episode, guys. Okay, one more thing we didn't even say. We'll probably be dropping just one episode per week, at least for the next few months until the World Cup starts. So when the World Cup is around, we might be doing two a week. But for now, we're going to be doing one a week, which I know is not ideal, but bear with us because we have some other commitments that are eating into our time and everything. So, but at least we're still keeping up with the podcast.
So thank you for listening. I know you enjoyed this show. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast, share to a friend so that they get good contents as well. Don't hold the football knowledge all to yourself. Don't be greedy, you know. Share to your friends. So without further ado, we have to say goodbye for now. From myself, Josh, and the entire Park on Earth podcast team, it's goodbye for now. Yeah.